Okay, my name is Robert. I'm an alcoholic. I got 10 minutes. It's 10:28. So, let me get a few things out of the way so I think you can properly judge me. I got here when I was 40 years old. My sobriety date is September 9th of 2005. So that makes me 53 today. I have a sponsor. He has a sponsor, and he has a sponsor. And I can tell you, those are all probably things I really wasn't looking for when I got here. But those are what I get. You don't always get what you want. But I've learned in AA, you get what you get. And so I guess the quick version, because I don't think I can even get through my 10th birthday in 10 minutes. But I was raised in a little town called Cupertino, California. It was real small at the time. I lived there from 0 to 18, one address. I moved when I was 18 years old, and for the next 22 years, I had 22 known addresses. Everywhere I went, there I was. I took my first drink when I was about 12 or 13 years old. It was between a 7th and 8th grade dance. Before an 8th grade dance, I think. And at the time, I think I was about 4'9", weighed about 75 pounds. I think after I took that drink, I was still 4'9" and 75 pounds. I just didn't care. And that allowed me something. I'm not sure what it allowed me, but it allowed me to probably talk to her, is probably what it did. And, you know, for the next 22 years, I chased that, and it led me to places that, that are unimaginable. I really didn't realize it at the time, but looking back, I know now that, I was in the grips of it's really easy to say I was in the grips of a progressive disease, but I can tell you when I started, I couldn't stop. And nothing mattered. And so that's what I did for the next 22 years. I've been arrested more times than I can probably count, spent more nights in jail than I can count, and I could count them actually, but it, I know that getting arrested is only difficult the first time. So if you've only been arrested once, you might want to give it another shot. Okay, it gets easier. It really does. Everything got easier when I, you know, because I would put these lines in the sand that I would not cross. And I'd tell myself, you know, if you do this, you have a problem. But I would just cross them and then make a new one, you know. And, you know, drinking took me through, it got me married, it got me divorced. I had everything I wanted by the time I was 28 years old. I had a wife, I had two children, I had a house. By the time I was 30, I didn't have anything. And I can tell you, life really wasn't that bad till the age of 30. And then I can tell you for the next 10 years, between 30 and 40, it was a real... That was a real grind, you know. That was a real grind. So anyways, at my 40th birthday, I got arrested. And my birthday's in December, so it's real nice. It was, you know, right after Christmas. My kids were just here to see me. And I... And my birthday is December 29th, and I said, hey, guys, because they were with my mom and my sister, and I said, I'll be back here at New Year's Eve, and once again, Dad didn't show up. So... And after that, you know, I did have an opportunity. The judge gave me one more shot. And the only way to do that was to move up to Fresno. And so, and I was living in Visalia at the time. I'm so glad that when I ever see people from Visalia here, because I never knew there was any sobriety in Visalia. So anyways, the only way to get to Fresno was to take the casino bus to Lemoore. And if you've been on that bus enough, you get to know the drivers. You're really not supposed to do that. You're just supposed to take it to and fro where you come from. Anyways, they let me do it. And, you know, that simple two-hour ride took about 4 days. And I got to Fresno, and I had nothing left. I came to live with my sister. It's always funny looking back because I really only think I was real close to turning it around still. I was just one lucky breakaway, or I was one thing happening and I would have been okay. And I can tell you looking back, I really never had any idea how close my cheese was to sliding off my cracker. And it's funny to say, but it's, you know, the depth of my reality and my perception were just that far off. You know, I was not a well individual. And so, you know, I started doing, you know, the program I went to said you had to go to AA, or they suggested you did. But I'd been suggested before to do that, and I never did it. And for whatever reason, I did it this time. And I went. And before I got there, my sister, who has some knowledge of the program, handed me the book and said, or put it on the counter and said, you might want to read this. And I read it from front to back before I came to a meeting. And I got to tell you, that book, there was something in it that, from Bill's story, because he was 40 or around there when he got sober, to, you know, and the one thing I never had is I never had a solution. You know, the only solution I ever had was alcohol. You know, that was a solution for everything that I did. And now that solution, my best friend, whatever you want to call it, no longer worked. And so I came, I met my sponsor, you know. I'm pretty sure I met him on a Wednesday. The only reason I can remember that is because there was two meetings on Wednesday. You know, I was one of the guys that had to ride a bike to get to a meeting, okay? And the only reason I knew I met him on a Wednesday is because he pissed me so far. He made me so mad in the morning that I needed to go back at noon to tell him how I felt. I don't need to tell you, he didn't show up at noon. You know, I should have called him, you know. And so I can tell you the last 12 years has been a ride. You know, it has been a ride in sobriety. And it's been somewhat slow at times, more times than not, you know. I still get consumed with fear, and I still get consumed with, you know, me wanting to. I always like the A, B, and C's, you know, and especially the B, that no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. I had a family that loved me, you know, and yet there's nothing they could do for me. And still today, I think I can be that B for other people in my life. I can be that human power that's going to help them through something. And I'm so full of shit sometimes. I don't know if you're supposed to swear up here, so I apologize. But I really struggle with that today, at times still, you know, because it's a matter of letting go and letting God do His thing for me that I trust Him with. But for you, I really don't trust Him that much. And I have a lot of things out there. I have one son in Germany. I have one son in China. I've got two little girls, and I'll stop. You know, it's amazing because, and this is where my perception is, I met a girl in AA. We got married. I told my sister, I'm never getting married again. And if I ever get married again, they're not going to have any kids. And if they have any kids, they're not going to have small kids. Okay? And she said, she laughed at me. You know, and it wasn't 6 months later, I met a lady. She had a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, and she was great, and they were cute. And I can tell you, 10 years later, they're 13 and 16. And what always freaks me out is that the 16-year-old, okay, because they're good kids. And the 13-year-old, they're both great kids. And I was drinking back then. I mean, where in my world where things were that screwed up, you know? And, but you know, I'm so blessed today to have Alcoholics Anonymous and a solution in my life. Because without it, you know, I wouldn't be able to come to Springville, California. I didn't know where Springville was 2 weeks ago, okay? And all I got to tell you is from the moment that we drove up, that you people seem to have a joy of life, you know, you're sober, you don't seem to be unhappy about it, and it's just a real different thing I can do on a Sunday morning than what I had going on, you know. I think that's been about 10 minutes. I just want to say thank you all for your hospitality. I think that we now take a 10-minute break. If I'm not, see, now I'm just getting warmed up. Now I can just go, okay? The nerves are gone, okay? And that's it. So I believe at about 10:48, we will resume the meeting and get on with our main speaker. Thank you.
I'm also saying I'm an alcoholic. I usually BS for the first 2 minutes because I'm so nervous. You know, what the hell are you guys going to do to me, okay? So I really would like to thank everybody that had anything to do with having me here. I don't know why they call me, and like anything else in AA, whenever somebody asks you to do something, my immediate reaction is to say no. But I've been taught in AA that I can think anything I want as long as I say yes. And I know what I'm going to say. I don't know what you guys are going to hear. Okay, so let's start with the beginning. Before I do that, you know, I haven't worn this thing in a long time. I'm talking about the sport coat. So I found this right here, right? You know, and as you can tell, I'm not Jewish, okay? So I stole this from a synagogue in Newport Beach with one of the guys that I sponsored got married, okay? I'm still a thief, a cheat, and a liar, you know. Last year I was doing a job in Rancho Bernard, and we went to a church, and I saw this book, and I wanted it, so I took it. But I put a $20 bill in there, okay, hoping that that would make up. I haven't paid for this right here. Okay. My sobriety date is October the 3rd of 1978. By the grace of God and all of you people, it hasn't been necessary for me to take a drink or to smoke any dope or take any mind-altering chemicals, and I don't know how that happened other than a loving God and you people in Alcoholic Anonymous. The book says that I should talk what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. It also states that I should talk about my strength, my experience, and my hope. My experience is I'm 71 years old, and I'm going to be 72 next February the 24th. My strength is I haven't had a drink or done anything for 39 years, and my hope is that I hope I don't drink tonight, okay? And I believe that it is possible because you people had taken an interest of somebody that had no idea what alcoholism was, what AA was about, what the heck I was going to do with my life. And I'll tell you a little bit about where I came from. I was born in Mexico. My parents were very loving. I have never been abused physically, emotionally, or sexually. And the reason that that is important for me to say is because not everybody has been as fortunate as I have. I was loved as a child. I had three older brothers. My parents never drank. My mother had come from a very well-to-do family in Mexico. They had come to the United States. Two of my brothers were born in the United States, and two of us were born in Mexico. And the reason for that is that my father was working with the Hilton Corporation building hotels, and then the Depression came in. And my mother says, so they tell me, they says, hey, listen, you know, there are people at my family's properties that are living a hell of a lot better than we are here in the United States because of the Depression. So they went back. Then we came back later. We crossed, and I went to school, and I had a very, very loving, normal, caring life all through my life. My parents had some ideas that you should educate yourself, you should work hard, you should get married, you should have a bunch of kids, you should take care of your kids, and on the weekends, you should have a good time. So my older brothers always had parties at the house, and there were girls, and I learned the dynamics of how to get along with people, you know, and they would bring girls, and they would eat, and they would dance, and they would grab ass, and I was a little tiny kid, and I couldn't wait to get old so that I could do the same thing, okay? So I learned the dynamics of getting along with people and being sociable from my brothers, you know. And, you know, I did what everybody else did, and I went to school, and I got married, and I had children. And I was living in El Paso, Texas, and like Robert was saying, you know, by the age of 21, 22, I had everything that I ever wanted, and drinking was something that, you know, it was part of my life. I never drank because I thought that it would change me. I never drank because I thought that it would enhance anything. I always drank because it seemed like it was a lot of fun, and it was fun for a lot of years until it didn't work anymore, you know. I was always kind of a weird kid, you know. Even though I had an upbringing, I always suffered from this underlying currents of being inept, being less than, being fearful, you know. And I could never figure those things out. Now, I do have to tell you that a lot of the things that I have learned has been because of people like you that have told me that I had low self-esteem, that I'm overwhelmed with fear, that no matter what I do, it's not good enough. And that somehow, someplace along the line, when they made me, they were lacking something. So all my life, I looked for this approval, okay? If you want to ask me what my drug of choice is, it's approval. And my wife is a drug dealer, okay? You know, always seeking for this approval. Let me tell you some things that happened. I was a gifted mathematician as a young kid and all that. So when I was in school, I had my first disappointment in life, you know. We were working so hard to get people on the moon, and I was so good with numbers and everything else. But I have a problem. I have this problem that I transpose numbers, you know. I think they call that dyslexia or something like that. And in those years, it was not an accepted, you know, problem, right? And I can remember one of my professors said, "Kid, you're a great numbers guy, you know, but you transpose numbers, and we're trying to put people on the moon. And if we let you work in here, we're going to end up in Tijuana, and we can't have that." So there was a problem, right? He was kind. He was telling me, you know, pick another, you know, thing to do, right? So then I devoted myself into going into marketing, selling and doing things. And, you know, my drinking took a turn. It was part of life. You know, I had some great memories. I learned how to drink Jack Daniels and smoke Cuban cigar with this friend of mine who had graduated from the University of Alabama, and we used to do our work and then go to a bar and, you know, talk about, I don't know what we talk at bars, but we talked a lot. We drank a lot of Jack Daniels and smoked cigars and everything else, you know. But I always had this feeling that no matter what I do, it was still not enough. You know, I have learned in Alcoholic Anonymous that my self-esteem is driven by the number of things that I accomplish on a daily basis. If I make a list and I complete 60% of those things, I still feel that it's not enough, you know. It's getting a hell of a lot better by working with you people, by working with the sponsor, by doing all those things that you people have suggested, you know. There was something lacking in me that most people don't lack, you know. I have come to believe today that I don't know why I drank, okay. All I know that when I drank, life became a heck of a lot easier, okay. Now, keep in mind, where I come from, there's no such thing as alcoholics or Alcoholic Anonymous or anything like that. So how did I find you guys? I didn't. You guys found me. You know, I had gotten a job with this corporation, and I was a young man on the way up, and life got tough, and I got myself in trouble. And I never liked what I had. I had a beautiful wife. I had three beautiful children. But I always wanted something else. So I did what most people in my thinking does. You know, I was unfaithful. I was never satisfied what I want. And my drinking began to get out of hand. Now, keep in mind that there was no way that I was going to think that drinking was creating a problem in my life. But at the end of my drinking, you know, I was losing my job. I lost my family. And I was telling somebody last night that I was an executive who wore a three-piece suit and had all these big things. And yet, I have a friend who had a restaurant, and I wanted a part-time job so I can subsidize my drinking. And the guy would give me work, but I never showed up, okay? You know, and then I would go the following week, and I would tell him, hey, Al, I promise I'll be here. And the guy would give me money. You know how we find people that always take care of us, okay? But I never showed up to work, okay? You know, so the last time that I drank, I was at the depths of my desolation by drinking. And, you know, if you're a drinking, you know all these horror stories and all those invisible lines that I never thought I would cross, and I did, you know. Being unfaithful was probably nothing compared to the other stuff that I did. And I was a thief, and I was a cheat, and I was a liar. And I would vacillate because my parents had not brought me that way. And I had such a need for the approval of my grandparents that sometimes when I would wake up in the morning by myself in the obligatory apartment, you know, with no furniture, sleeping on the floor, a couple of fruit crates in there with the obligatory Playboy magazine, you know. And I would sit in there and I would cry and I would ask myself, why are you doing that, okay? If your grandparents would look at you, they would be thoroughly disappointed. And I didn't know what to do. I just didn't know what to do. I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. How could somebody who had been treated so nice and loved so much would end up in something like that, you know? And by this time, drinking is not a luxury. It becomes a necessity. And the only way that I can go to sleep is by passing out. And I can't go to sleep because there's a couple of rats on the corner right there. And if I close my eyes, those rats are going to come and get me. Funny thing, when I wake up the next day, those rats have turned into socks, okay? You know, and where I come from, you don't discuss how you feel, what you're going through. You see somebody, how's it going? It's going great, man. I mean, you know, if it gets any better than that, I will wrist, you know, cut my wrist and kill myself. But you can't say that. So anyway, this particular day, I had threatened to quit this big job that I had, and they sent somebody to talk to me and talk me out of quitting and all that. And we went to this fancy restaurant, and we had lunch, and we had a couple of decanters of white wine. Nothing happened. I went back to that rat hole that I was living in, and for the first time, I wasn't drunk, and I wasn't sober, and I didn't know what the heck was wrong with me. And so I went back to that restaurant where my friend was always giving me work. And I sat on the corner and I hustled the waitress for money. And I went back to my apartment. And then I came back at night. And a bunch of people like you came in to the coffee shop. And I remember sitting on the counter, and you know how we are in AA, you go to a place and you think you own the place, so AA came over and took the restaurant and all that, and I kept looking at them, and everybody was happy, and everybody was doing what we do in AA, and I thought to myself, you know, it's just not fair, they are so happy, and I am so miserable. And I'm past being miserable, you know. I'm past being despondent. I am just empty. Empty of anything that any human being could have within himself. And I don't know what made me do that, but I turned around and I asked the guy, hey, can I sit with you guys? And one of the guys, like you said, you sure you want to sit with us? We're alcoholics. And I said, I don't care. So then they got me to the group, and there's this guy who I think, was attracted to me. And he says, do you find yourself having problems with your sex life? And I look at the guy and say, how do you know that? Okay. I said, just a guess. So that was the beginning of Alcoholic Anonymous for this guy right here. You know, the usual AA troopers went out into the car. They got a book. They took me to the back of the restaurant. And they pound on me. You know, I was fresh meat. Okay, I didn't know what the hell. Okay. So the guy who's my sponsor today gave me a big book. And he asked me, do you think you can go home and not drink? I said, I don't know. He said, well, do you have anything to drink at home? I said, of course I do. What a stupid question. He said, well, I want you to go home and I want you to do me a favor. He says, you know, I want you to take that bottle and I want you to pour it down the sink. He says, but do me a favor, okay? In those days, we had no cell phones. Remember, we used to have those long cords in this. I want you to put that cord right by the bottle so I can hear that bottle going click, 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 like that, right? And I did that. And as I'm doing that, I am just crying like a baby. And I'm thinking, I hope this SOB knows what he's doing, because we just wasted a good fifth of Jack Daniels here, okay? And I remember reading the book that whole night, and I can't remember anything. So he called me the next day, and he says, have you drank? And I said, no. He says, you think you can go until 11 o'clock? I said, I don't know. He said, okay, I'll call you. 11:30, the guy calls, have you drank? And I said, no. He said, you think you can make it till 4 o'clock? And I said, I don't know. And so he called me at 4 and says, have you drank? I said, no. He said, I'm going to pick you up for a meeting, and I'm going to take you to meet a bunch of wonderful, loving, caring people. Well, by this time, you know, I don't feel as bad as I did the night before, right? So I'm pacing and I'm thinking, what if I made a mistake? You know, I'm a young executive. You know, I am a college graduate. How is it going to look if I go to an AA meeting, right? So I'm pacing back and forth and I'm thinking, what if I'm not an alcoholic, okay? But what if you are? What if you're not? And the guy must have been late like 3 minutes, but it looked like 6 hours, okay? You know, I don't know if it's the same today, but it seemed to me like in those days, there were only three people that had cars, okay? You know, because everybody was trucking everybody to meetings, okay? And then two of the guys that had cars, that different color fenders or doors or anything like that, okay? And this guy had a new band, right? And so he took me to the first meeting at the Clovis Hospital back in 1978. And when I walked in there, there was a group of people like you. I was 32 years old. I was a skinny kid. And I lacked so much on the inside that I tried to compensate on the outside. So I had to wear a three-piece suit. I had to really look good. I weighed 135 pounds. And I didn't know what the hell was wrong with me. And so I walk into that meeting, and like all the ladies and all the guys here, everybody was so full of love, and they welcomed me. And they told me that I was the most important person in this place, and I loved that, until I heard that they told every newcomer the same shit. You know, mine by now, I am a broken horse, okay? I can't look you straight in the eyes. I have to look down at your shoes. I could tell you what kind of shoes everybody was wearing, but I couldn't remember a face. I couldn't remember anything. All I would do was just the broken horse down and look down, you know. And I can remember after the meeting, we went to this coffee shop, and it was called Sambo's, okay, on Blackstone. And this guy talked to me, and he said, you know, you really don't have to drink anymore if you don't want to. And I remember crying and saying, but you don't understand. I haven't wanted to drink for a long time, but I can't go one day without it, you know. And that was the beginning of the journey. I've been here ever since. I can tell you that if you are new or relatively new, I don't know if Alcoholics Anonymous will work tomorrow, but I know it's worked today. And I didn't know what the hell was going to become of my life. You know, and I met a lot of people like you at the Alano Club at a different meetings. And they used to call me kid because everybody, at least I thought they were old. You know, I was 32. They might have been 34, but they look old to me. And I would go to meetings and, you know, one old timer will take me and says, you know, kid, if you come to AA and you do the things that we ask you to do, it's a very simple program. All you have to do is do what we suggest for you to do. Don't drink one day at a time. Don't drink in between. Don't smoke dope. Just try to take it as slowly as you possibly can. Well, to tell a newcomer like that, you know, my head is going around like 20,000 miles, okay? But those guys will tell me, you know, you have to concentrate on not drinking one day at a time. You know, and I always was an arrogant, snob, intellectual genius in my head, okay? I never told you guys that, okay? But I thought, what the hell is this guy, you know, who's a plumber, is going to teach somebody that can design or figure out the cosine or the sine and do hyperbolas and stuff like that? And what the guy said, he says, you know, we have to clean the insides so that we don't have to compensate on the outside. And I didn't understand what he was talking about. And what he was talking about is that I always like to good on the outside because I lack so much on the inside. And my insides were so dirty. And my insides lacked something that I couldn't go any place and get that. And he would say, you know, kid, if you come with us, okay, your life is going to change dramatically. And you will be able to do things there beyond your comprehension. You know, and that sounded so good, okay? But I would thought, oh, you're so full of bullshit, okay? The problem was that I had no place to go, so I kept coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I hook up with this group, the village group, and there was this competition about working the steps. You know, you had Susie, what step are you on? I'm step on step three, and I would think, well, Susie, why don't you take step three and stuff it up your nose? Okay. Well, I'm working with step four with my sponsor, and I'm having this spiritual awakening, and I say, yeah, well, you should get up early to awake even more, okay? You know, this thing in my head that would just going, but I would go and do, and out of pressure, I started working the steps. You know, keep in mind, when I was a young kid, I had gone to a Jesuit school, and at one point, I thought about becoming a Catholic priest, right? Because I was fascinated by the Jesuit order, because they were trying to make changes, they were trying to take all the oppression, they were trying to make it a better world, and that's what I wanted to do, at least I thought, okay, until I started drinking, then it didn't matter anymore. And then they put the three conditions. You have to take a vow of poverty. I can handle that. You have to take a vow of obedience. I can handle that. But then you have to take a vow of chastity. And I said, I don't think so, okay? I am not willing to go to any length, okay? When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had absolutely no interest in dealing with God or the church or anything that was religious, right? And the guy who's my sponsor was very gentle, and he says, we don't have to deal with that, okay? You know, the first step is you're powerless and your lives are unmanageable, and you have to come to believe that something bigger than you is going to make a difference in your life. And I couldn't wrap that around my head because I was too smart. But one day, I'm driving, and I had this thought. One day, I was a drunk, and now I'm not. what happened? It was not an epiphany. It was not a deduction. It was not the mathematical formula that I had worked. It was simply a thought that came, one day you are drunk, the next day you're not. What happened? So the only thing that I had done was to come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and the only thing that I had done was not drink. And so that began, you know, that slow process of searching for something bigger than me. And for a long time, Alcoholics Anonymous and the people were my higher power. You know, I was talking to Bob at the beginning of the meeting, and to me, there's always this great comfort when there's somebody at a meeting who has more time than I do. Because I get that sense of security. I know that the program continues to work for people that have been here longer than I have. And whatever I think, whatever I do, AA does work. And so when I go to a meeting and there's people with more time than I have, I get this sense of safety. I know I'm going to be okay. And no matter what problem I have, I am going to find a solution like Robert said. So then I became real smart, you know. I wanted to be a missionary, and I spoke all over the place. I was telling people, God has a great sense of humor. One time I spoke in front of 2,000 people. The next week I spoke in front of 4 people. Just so that God could say, hey, let's not get too smart right here, okay? So I went through the steps because Susie James went into her 5th step and her 6th step and her 7th step. And by the time she finished her 10th step, she was needing stuff, you know. And I hated that, okay? But I had no place to go. So I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have 3 boys, and my wife so fit that she didn't want to be a mom, and she sent me the 3 boys. I was 33 years old. I was a handsome, young executive, and I had 3 little boys, okay? I got my car repossessed. We're getting evicted from things. And I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. So people in AA would come to my house. A lot of women would come to my place. And I would be so arrogant to think that they came because I was a hot stuff, right? But they didn't. They came to make sure I wasn't abusing those 3 little boys, okay? And they took care of me. And they forced me, you know, to become a better parent. They forced me to do whatever was necessary in order to take care of those 3 little kids. And AA saved my family and saved myself. So the question becomes, how do you pay back for something like that? Not only has Alcoholics Anonymous restored me to a sense of sanity, but it has allowed me to get a second chance. To be a better father, to be a better friend, to be a better employee, simply by coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and working those suggested steps that they talked about. Okay. You know, and the insides were so dirty, and they were so gooky and everything else, you know. And thank God for simple people in AA. And they would say, you know, the steps are like a constant flow of water on a piece of rusted pipe. If you will let the water just hit that rust, it would get cleaned up, okay? And I said, yeah, you're so full of bullshit, okay? Explain that to somebody who didn't go to high school, okay? Not to me, okay? But I had no other place to go, so I did that, okay? And my friend Steve has an analogy of the insides that those windows right there will allow the light of goodness to come in if the window is clean, but the light cannot come in if the window is dirty. So for a lot of years, you people have been scrubbing my insides, you know, to make it so that the light of reasoning and the light of kindness and the light of responsibility, and most of all, the light of satisfaction can come in through myself. Interesting thing. I used to need so many things. I put so many demands on the world and you. Nothing was ever good enough because of that lack of goodness that I had. Because of my ineptness, because of my clumsiness, you know. And AA has been a source of education, you know. I think the book talks about the fact that half measures avail us nothing, right? That was my nickname. I have always been a great 50-yard dasher, okay? We can do anything for 50 yards, okay? Then after that, I lose interest and I go someplace else, or I never finish anything. And you people consistently have forced me. You know, I know you say suggestions, but it's bullshit, okay? It's forcefulness, okay? You have forced me to go into 55, 60, 65, but once in a while, I hit that 100-yard mark, okay? You know, and I fight it all the way through it. So what happened, okay? So I get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went through a period that everything I touched turned to muck. I couldn't find a job. I had 3 little kids. Nobody would hire me. I went to buy a 7-Eleven and they told me I was overqualified, okay? You know, and I had this real resentment against the Catholic Church. So the only job that I could find was working for the bishop at the Diocese of Fresno, right? And part of the requirement was that I had to go to Mass every day, and I hated that, okay? And then we had to go to a retreat at Three Rivers once a month. And I would sleep during the retreat because I didn't want to hear your nonsense, okay? You know, and then there came a point, and I don't know where that came from. I think it's God's grace, okay? And I said, why don't you fight it? Would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? So I give it a chance, and life became easier. And I had 3 little boys, and I was resigned to live my life as a parent. I never had the guts to leave my children, okay? It doesn't make me better. It doesn't make me noble. It doesn't make me a superstar. I just never had it inside of me to walk away from my kids. So I would prostitute myself. I would do anything in order to take care of those kids, right? You know, and then I met somebody in AA, you know, and she had 1 little boy, and you know, she was just really, really pretty girl. She had come from a very good family and all that. And everybody wanted to help her with her 12 steps, right? And I just stayed the hell away from her, okay? But for whatever reason, I ended up getting the prize. I don't know, okay? So we merged the families, okay? And we've been together since 1983. You know, she lied to me, okay, because when we moved in, all she wanted, we were just going to move in. And one night at midnight, she wakes up and she said, I want to get married. And I said, right now. Right now, right now. She says, well, I told you. I said, no, you didn't. I said, well, I'll move in the morning, okay. I'll find a place, okay. And I didn't move, okay? Then we had to go through this process of annulling my marriage, and I was working for the church, so they put us through hoops for 2 years, okay? Finally, they allow us to get married, and we married in there, and, you know, we've been married ever since, and you know, she has been just what I needed. And I wasn't looking for that. She's been a great mom to my children. You know, like, I'm fulfilling my parents' wish, you know. We have great-grandchildren and grandchildren living in Germany, in Bellevue, Washington, and Modesto. I mean, and, you know, they all think of her as their mom and their grandma. She's been sober 35 years, okay? She's on her last guaranteed chance, okay? You know, because relationships are real hard. But because of AA and because of you people, one day at a time, you know, we have been together this long. So what is my message to you? What am I trying to say? What I'm trying to say is that here you have this insecure human being who had a lot of possibilities, who didn't know what the hell was wrong with him. And you end up in a place like this where everybody is powerless. But because of your powerlessness, I have acquired so much power by God's grace that is beyond comprehension. You know, and if you don't believe what I say, I can understand that, okay? You do not have to believe what I say. But you cannot argue with what has happened to me and to thousands of people that it comes to the room. They don't drink. They become part of AA and their life gets better. That you cannot argue. Okay? And if you don't like what I have, I can understand that. But do you like what you have? Okay, that would be the question. You know, in closing, I like to mention, usually, Kathy and I go to Mass, and then we go to breakfast. And if you ask me, do you go to Mass because of Mass, or do you go to Mass because you go to breakfast? I would say that it's because of the breakfast, okay? So today is no different. And then I get to meet two Jesus, okay? Jesse and Jesse, who have the same last name. So I got two for the price of one, okay? I should tell you a little bit of what happened in my life, and that is that there was so much competition in a group to be of service, okay? You had to work the steps, and you had to become a GSR, you had to get involved, and you have to sponsor. And, you know, God has a great sense of humor. I was 60 days sober, and this guy asked me, would you be my sponsor? And I said, sure. And he said, well, what do you want me to do? I said, I don't know. What do you want to do? Okay. You know, and Don died sober last year, right? You know. And so because of that, you know, sponsoring became a very intricate part of my life, you know. And thank God that my wife was very understanding. She never once complained that I spent a lot of time in there. And as a result of that, all those people have enriched my life. You know, I've had the opportunity to see five or six of those guys get married. I married one guy. I don't know why he asked me. We had to go to the internet and get a preacher certificate. I don't know if it's legal or not, okay? I don't want to tell him that, but it's okay. If you're still a doubter in Alcoholic Anonymous, I'm going to tell you something that I have learned. Alcoholic Anonymous is like the most prestigious university in the world. People that come from AA come from all walks of life. They come with all levels of education. There's some that are very wealthy. There's some that are very poor. But once you go through the door, it doesn't matter how much you drink, where you drink, how much money you have. Everybody is just somebody who has a problem with drinking. And if you want to learn anything, anything, this is the place to be. You know, our home group has been in existence for 52 years, right? And we have had one of everything except the real plumber, okay? In 52 years, we've never had a plumber. We had a guy who was a city inspector who had a big plumbing business, but he was not a plumber. He didn't know how crap rolled down, okay? Okay. Other than that, we have had one of everything. And people in Alcoholics Anonymous are always willing to help me with my little handicaps. I remember when I was young and I would be very obnoxious and the old timer would say, you know, kid, you really don't have to do that way. You don't have to talk that word. You know, there are other words in the alphabet besides the letter F, okay? I don't know if you know that, okay? Maybe they didn't teach you in college, but there are other letters besides the F letter, okay? And, you know, I would say the F word, and then I would go home, and I would feel embarrassed, you know? Or people will tell you, whatever you want to learn, there's somebody here that has been really, really good at that. As a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, Kathy and I have had the opportunity to travel to a lot of places in the world, gone to AA. I was able to start a meeting in Madrid, Spain, because I got detained there for a month. I lost my green card, okay? And I had the time of my life, okay? And Kathy's here worried about her husband. And thank God for American Express, okay? Because you can live in Europe forever with American Express, okay? Until you have to pay the bill, okay? Then it becomes a problem. And so the minute I walked into the United States, we went and I became a naturalized citizen. So I'm not going to be hanging out in London or Spain or Rome anymore, okay? And but that taught me that AA is every place in the world. I met some people that are not as fortunate to have the ability to come to meetings, okay? And they communicate through CDs. There's a story about these two merchant marines that the only contact they had with AA is when those ships cross each other and they wave at each other, okay? And yet, I think it's a real inconvenience for me to go to meetings and drive a mile or walk a half a block or anything like that. I'm too busy, okay? I've been to meetings in Mexico, you know, where men are allowed to sponsor women and they have three kinds of sobriety, okay? They have the real sobriety, or you have the temporary sobriety, or you have today's sobriety, okay? So you can claim any sobriety you want, okay? You know, and I don't know if it works for them or not, but it's kept me sober. You know, I don't know what else to tell you other than as I get older, life seems to become a lot easier. My relationship with my higher power seems to magnify. You know, the 12th step talks about the fact that we have to go through a spiritual awakening. So what does that mean? How do I know that I have experienced a spiritual awakening? When I see somebody who's new, when I see somebody on the streets, okay, somehow it strips me of all my pride, strips me of all my character defects, and I want to help that person, knowing that he may not make it, knowing that he doesn't have anything to give me. But for a moment, I get that sense that all my defenses are down and I'm able to help somebody because somebody took the time to spend with me. Alcoholics Anonymous is one drunk talking to another. And I think the most precious time that anybody can have is by one drunk talking to another to tell you, hey, I know how you feel. I've been there. And just do what we do, okay? And if you drink, come back because we don't shoot our wounded here, okay? You know, this is the place. You cannot find a better deal. You know, and I've gone through a lot of things in there. And in closing, I'll tell you this. As I trudge the road of happy destiny, okay, as I go through life, anything that gets inside of me and wants to tear me apart and wants to get me down is a blessing. You know, and a blessing is long gone before I realized that it was a blessing. And a blessing will open doors that I never thought that would be possible to open. You know, I used to be bitter. I used to be angry. I used to be prejudiced. And today, I'm much, much better. And that's why I believe that Alcoholic Anonymous is the greatest blessing that ever happened in my life. Thank you.